B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Let me double check my email. I'm not expecting my rejection letter for another week or so. It came on July 4th last year. Happy 4th of July. Your master's ticket application.
Hardy, I think it's just
rejected.
The best that you read your rejection letters every single year that you get from the Masters, man. That story that you told yesterday, talking about that and the scam that went on with the couple from, or the family from Katy. So it just got me thinking, man.
Are they from Katy, Texas?
They're from Katy, Texas, yeah. It gives me an opportunity. I get to work with you. I've never had a chance to work with you, and I'm really enjoying this today. Thanks for having me with you guys.
It gives me a chance to brag a little bit.
I get to brag about my master's stories. So I appreciate you giving me the platform to do that, man.
Well, if you missed the story yesterday, this family in Texas had essentially acquired millions of emails and used those emails to put in applications for ticket requests. Anybody can do this. You go to masters.com, you fill out the application, and you say, what do you want? And every year I do the same thing. I will take two tickets for anything you'll give me. Practice rounds, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever. Mm-hmm. And if selected, then you get to purchase those tickets. And I think the practice rounds tickets might be $60 or $70. Masters Sunday tickets, I think they charge you like $115 each.
They haven't gone up.
No, it's ridiculous. They've gone up since Bobby Jones won.
Of course.
But, they've gone up over the years, but still.
Not by much.
Okay, it's not a lot to get in if you get a legitimate ticket. Where you'll spend the money is either on the secondary market, which is what these people did. So they ended up, using these millions of emails that they got from, databases or whatever, and won hundreds of times over the years and resold those tickets for a profit of around $530,000.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, they got busted and whatever is going to happen to them. But, mm-hmm. The people who end up going, you can go. You and I can go next year and go buy a package right now with, tickets from the secondary market and, travel and accommodation and all that, and spend several thousand dollars each to end up in Augusta, Georgia for a day at the Masters. I've always said I want to get there by legitimate means, and that didn't stop me from, asking CBS people over the years, hey, can you get me in? And the answer was always no. Even when Troop and I would sit here, and Troop was buddies with Jim Nantz, and I would kind of ask him jokingly when he would call into our show once or twice a year, hey, any chance this year? No, there's no chance. Thank you. All right, I got to ask. But you've been twice. For all I know, you went on tickets acquired by that group of scam artists from Texas when you were living there. So yeah. I don't know. So please, Ted,
yes,
by all means, tell me, how was it that you were able to go, and when did you go?
Yeah, I went twice. I went 1998 and then 2004. 1998, Mark O'Meara won the Masters.
The year after his buddy Tiger Woods.
That's correct.
Burst down to the scene.
I heard they're not best friends anymore. But no. Yes, that was a phenomenal entrance into just mainstream consciousness. Tiger
Woods. And what was the second year you went?
2004.
Was not Mickelson.
It was Mickelson. It was the first year he won his.
In 2004.
Where he jumps up like half inch off the ground.
All
yeah,
right.
He made his putt on 18 to win it.
Okay.
Mark O'Meara made a birdie putt on 18 to win it. And so
first of all, how did you get the tickets?
I got the tickets. It's good knowing people. My agent at the time is still my agent. Once an agent, always an agent. He represented Hale Irwin. Now, why does my football agent represent Hale Irwin? Hale Irwin was an All-American football player at the University of Colorado. And so my agent also represented Hale Irwin. Hale was nice enough. Great guy. He's got kind of this reputation of being a curmudgeon. Hale Irwin was one of my, he was great to me. His nephew I played with, Heath Irwin, who also was drafted by the Patriots in 1997. That's my connection to Hale Irwin. Hale was kind enough to give me the tickets.
Now, was Hale playing in 98?
He was on the Champions Tour at this time. He was not playing on
the
PGA
Tour. So he didn't play
at
the Masters?
No. No.
Okay.
No, he'd long since competing at that in the PGA Tour.
Okay.
Never won the Masters either. So he didn't get that, which is one of the coolest things.
But he still got the invite up until, God.
Did he?
I'm gonna double check because I think a buddy of mine used to caddy for him down in Florida. A friend of mine named Scott Hawley, who was on the Canadian tour, would spend parts of his season working at a club, mm-hmm. Just as a job at one of these clubs where a bunch of professionals were members. And I thought Hale Irwin was one of the guys that he would loop for, and he would get him ready for tournaments like the Masters. And he was like, I understand he is, a great champion and former player, but he's like, I can't believe I'm out here looping for this guy as he gets ready to go off and play in one of these tournaments. When if I were to go and play, if I put the bag down and picked up my own clubs, I would have to give him two strokes aside based on the way he plays the game now.
So I got two tickets from Hale Irwin through my agent, which was great. And I went down there with my dad in 1998, and it was one of the most unbelievable golf trips I've ever been. If you're a golf lover, you have a chance to go to Augusta before your time ends. I highly suggest it. Some of the highlights of Augusta, all right? And you've probably heard a million of these stories, but I'm just going to basically rub it in a little bit.
Hold on one second. Where did you stay when you were down there? Because I've heard about this. It's like, I'm going to the Masters. Yeah. It's going to be great. You end up staying at like a Motel 6 for $800
a
night.
I've done two versions. 1998, Senior and I, my dad, otherwise known as Senior, Ted Senior, him and I stayed basically at one of those Motel 8s, okay? Didn't care. It was just a very basic room. You're right. We paid way too much to stay there, but we didn't care because we were at Augusta. The second time I stayed at this house that was was hosting a bunch of people through this company when companies were spending a lot to entertain clients, if you will. So I've experienced both. I've experienced the house where you have your own house and you have a room and you have all the food catered. And then I've done it with my dad where you're just staying at a Motel 6 and you're eating at Shoney's buffet at night. But you don't care. The honor system at Augusta is one of the coolest things ever. What is the honor system? Right?
I don't know.
Okay. It's the coolest thing. So the gates open the first, every round, the gates open at 8:30. And what you do is you get there at 8:30 and you're at that gate. And when that gate opens, dad and I both had two chairs, one in each arm. All right. And what you do is you're told not to run. You have to walk.
Right.
All right. And you can put chairs down throughout the course. And no one will touch those chairs. You can go and walk around, leave those chairs there, come back, and there could be a massive amount of people all around your chairs, but no one is sitting in your chairs. Quote thus the honor system. So we went and we strategically put two chairs at Amen Corner. And then we found another spot that we really enjoyed was the green at 15. So we would just go back and forth. We put chairs one time on the hole number 7. So you can see the approaches on 7. You can see the approaches on 2. You can see the tee shot on 3. Just getting you excited. So the honor system is unlike anything. It's the coolest thing ever. You don't see that in any other golf tournament. It is known there that if you put a chair there, you leave it, no one will touch it. Tons of celebrities you see there. I mean, I've seen so many different celebrities. When you go to the Masters, everybody's a huge fan, right? The merchandise is unbelievable. You see everybody wearing Masters merchandise all the time. It's awesome. The cost of food, everybody talks about. You can get a beer for $2. You get a sandwich, a pimento cheese sandwich for $1.50. Now, you don't know if it's you're drinking, a Bud Light, a Coors Light, a Heineken. You just know, is it light beer or is it regular beer? That's all it says. So there's no shows of any, the sponsors are all covered up, and so you never see if it's not a Coke, it's a cola, right? And the prices are unbelievable. The practice range experience, you can go there and watch them tee off or hit practice balls. It's incredible. The undulation of the course, you don't appreciate it until you're there. The dips and valleys and hills, and it's unlike anything. The galleries are the best in golf. Because not only the honor system, but there's not a lot of people there. They limit how many people go there.
Right.
So you can literally, I mean, everybody's, you're standing right next to the guy as they're teeing off. I mean, one of my favorite things to do was to watch the approach on 1, and then right next to it is the tee for number 9. So you can go watch the approaches on 1, and then me and my buddy, we just go watch them. I mean, they're like right there. There's right there. And so it was an incredible experience. that I will never forget, that I will always cherish, that I wish that you someday, Hardy.
Oh. The best thing is watching his face go from a smile to whatever this face is now with each bullet point. Teddy.
The last two rounds start, you know, because they cut the field in half at around 11:30. The gates would open at 8:30. Hardy, me and Dad, me and my buddy Barry, we would walk for 3 hours. Just walk the course, man. It was incredible. It is.
How many days did you go time you went?
I went four. I saw rounds Friday, Saturday, and Sunday each time. And what we did the second time with my buddy, the best system ever since the guys don't tee off until the first groups don't go out, tee off until 11:30. Him and I would squeeze in a round in the morning at a course nearby Augusta. So we'd get up early, play golf, have a great round of golf, go home, shower.
Play golf?
Yeah.
And then go to the Masters.
Then go to the Masters. Greatest trip ever, man.
Is Hale still getting tickets?
No, I haven't. I don't. You know what? It's a good call.
I checked. Hale last played in the Masters in 1996, but he played in the U.S. Open up until 2002, and yeah. I guess he withdrew in 2003. So whatever.
And one of the cool experiences too was in 1998, the year Mark O'Meara won it. Do you know who was on the leaderboard that year? Do you know who made a final charge? And I'll never forget. I'm sitting at the in these chairs at the hole number 7, and these two sweet ladies, Thelma and Louise. I don't know what their names were. These old ladies. We heard this roar go up, and the ladies
in 98,
1998.
It wasn't Jack. Was it Jack in 98? Yeah,
Jack Nicklaus.
One last push.
He made a run.
Made it onto the front page of the leaderboard, on the main leaderboard.
He was like within four or five strokes of the lead.
Yeah.
And, I'll never forget. This roar went up, and Thelma and Louise, these two sweet ladies, they lean over to my dad, and they say, Jack just birdied. How'd you know that? We all know the roars for Jack. And then, of course, the leaderboard changes. Jack Nicklaus just birdied, and these two ladies were right. They've been going to the Masters for 35 years, they said, and they know when Jack Nicklaus birdies. It's unlike any roar you'll ever hear. So those are just some of the highlights.
Yeah.
There's a lot more I can get into.
It's great.
But those are some of the highlights, bud.
Here's Ted Johnson.
You're missing
He gets to go for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, okay. Multiple years. Still waiting for a practice round invite. Here's what I'll do for you, Ted. When I get the email, I don't open it till we're on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you know. I'll give you a call in case you're not, working that day. And I'll let you know so you can be listening and you can take one sip of my pain.
Fair enough,
that to your Masters experience.
Fair enough, man. I know, that hurts, but it's...
I thought it was great.
Did you enjoy that?
Oh, I really enjoyed that.
There's so many great stories. And I've seen a hole-in-one on
16. We don't have time for any more.
All right, fair enough.
Talk about David Ortiz getting shot instead. That'll actually be a better conversation, I think, for me. I'll enjoy that more.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
All right.
Zolak and Bertrand.
That's a 3-inch difference between those two guys.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Everybody.
I hope you enjoyed the Ted Johnson Masters stories. I didn't care for him, quite frankly.
I want you to experience all those things. It really is. I got to go on 2 trips of a lifetime to Augusta. It's if you're a golf fan and Hardy, getting to know you better. I mean, you're hardcore, and you deserve to experience that.
You started telling a story about, like, off the air. It's like there was one putt in a tournament where it was a par putt. And had it happened, it would have been, I said, Tom Watson at the British.
I
know what you're talking about.
I couldn't believe you, because that to me was, if Tom Watson makes that putt.
Were you there too? Were you over there?
I was watching on TV. Buddy.
Okay, all right. Well, that one you and
Boston. But
same on that
one.
Yeah,
you know you're golf, man, because I didn't even get through the sentence, and you're like, Tom Watson.
Is there,
But that would have been a greatest sports accomplishment. Like, the guy was like almost 60 years old when he was competing for the British Open, and the joke's on 18.
I know.
Just part, buddy.
I just want to, get there, but I don't know what it is. I want to get there by legitimate means. I've had people, there was a guy who called last year and said, I got a couple of practice round tickets. I can't go. You can have them. You want to buy them? I'm like, no, thanks. You know, I want to do the lottery. I want to get in. Believe me. If Hale Irwin's agent called me up tomorrow and said, you've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday grounds passes for next year, I'll take them. You know, yeah. I will take them. I have a drop dead date in my mind. If I don't make it in at a certain point in an age,
yeah,
then I will bite
sell
the bullet.
Sell your soul. Your soul to get tickets.
I'll drop the whatever it is, the $5,000 yeah. For the airfare, the hotel, and the, you know, the one day Thursday grounds pass. And, you know, my wife and I will go. But it's not next year. It's not happening then. So
you know what? You owe that to yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, so hopefully that day will come for you.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome.
Let's grab a couple of calls here. We'll talk about the latest on the David Ortiz situation, too. But first, we go to Steven Attleboro. Steve, you're on with Hardy and Ted Johnson, filling in for Zoe and Beetle. What's up?
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. Ted, I just want to say I loved you as a player. I put you right up there with Steve Nelson. My quick question is, of the Celtics' first two-round picks, who do you or the Celtics think has the most potential? And second, who do you think could make the quickest transition to the pros, if you have any, you know, idea?
All right, quickest. All right, we'll start with the most potential. Mm-hmm. I mean, based on what we've seen so far, or what little I know about these guys, I'll just go with the guy that they selected first in Romeo, just because I think he probably has the most versatility with his ability to go inside. I think you can develop a shot. You know, the knock on him right now is that he doesn't have much of a shot, but we can see players develop that. We also see players struggle their entire careers trying to find that rhythm and that stroke. But in terms of just, you know, what looks and feels like a basketball player, I'd go with him.
Yeah, Romeo Langford. Look, he was a freshman this year. Missed a lot of time because of an injury. He didn't take he was 27% from 3-point land, but he had a torn ligament in his thumb.
Dealt with an injury. Yeah.
So
with two injuries. He had a dealing with the back and with the thumb ligaments.
Yep.
So he says he's feeling fine with both.
He's got a 7-foot wingspan, so he's got length. He's a versatile player. I mean, he's talked about basketball in their view for him is to be a positionless type player, and that's where it's going with the NBA. And when you talk about Grant Williams, the kid they picked 22nd overall, they talk about him being a little bit of an undersized power forward. So unless he's got a great post-up game and he just brings, you know, something to the table, that might be something that works against him, the fact that he is a little undersized for that position. But Romeo Langford, who they did pick 14th overall, it sounds like, and that's, look, this kid can, he gets to the basket. He's a guy that can create his own shots. He gets the free throw line a lot, which this team needs more of. They need more guys that will take it to the hoop. Shot 194 free throws last year. So he's a fearless guy who will take it to the rim. Now you just got to get his shot better, which has always kind of been surprising to me a little bit, that you got guys like Giannis, you got guys like Ben Simmons who are considered some of the best at their position, but are terrified to take three-pointers, at least Ben Simmons is, and still need to work on their jump shot, yet they're considered elite players in this league.
All right, let's go to Paul in the car. He's got something on Danny Ainge for us. Paul, you're on with Hardy and Ted Johnson. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good, man.
Good.
So my point on Danny Ainge is I understand where the criticism is coming from because of where the team currently sits, but to go back and jeopardize the moves individually is hard to do for me besides one and maybe two. The one is they had a chance to trade Terry Rozier when he had at a very high value. Danny had a chance to take another team, rake him over the coals, and have overpay for a guy like Terry Rozier, and we kept him on board, and his value is absolutely decreased. I mean, he's coming up on free agency, he's a restricted free agent. And I think based on that lesson, now, unless he's got some big plan in free agency to get us back to be a championship contender, I think it would be a great time to trade Jaylen Brown. Because if Jaylen Brown comes out and doesn't have a great year this year and doesn't step up, his value is automatically gone down drastically. For me, he seems like a guy that might be the next Jeff Green. And I know it's a hard thing to do to trade a guy like that now, but, you know, those are two opportunities that Terry Rozier won, and I think Danny could maybe learn from that and really be able to take advantage of a team to overpay a guy like Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, the notion that they could have dealt Terry Rozier, I don't disagree. You know, there are certainly opportunities to trade a lot of these guys, but based on the way the season ended and the presumed departures of both Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, Terry Rozier, as much as I hate to say it, is a guy that you can't afford to be without right
now. They
need him. Now you need him. So, I don't know. The criticism,
Ainge kept him as insurance, and the insurance is going to pay off probably.
Yeah. The criticism of Ainge, I think, is obviously no one loves the position they're in right now, but I have difficulty understanding how he is at fault for this.
No,
you know?
Right now, he's not at fault. 1 or 2, 3 years down the line, as we go through this retooling, rebuilding, that's a different conversation. But all these things that have gone wrong for the Celtics, how could you possibly foresee these?
Yeah, it's very difficult to, but I think, again, to put it on the general manager, I feel like more blame should go to Brad Stevens. Like, here's the talent. Now it's your job to get these guys all believing in each other. But when you
Ted, this is such an underrated thing, I think, in sports. And in a football locker room, I get it. You got 53 guys. And if somebody, if Adalius Thomas is, you know, being a dink, right? Okay, you know what? Forget it. You know, we can't deal with this right now. You know, find somebody else. We're two, three deep at some of these positions. We'll figure it out, you know? Mm-hmm. If there are certain guys who aren't working out, you got to move on. You don't have time to babysit. On a basketball team, that's part of the job. Part of the job is managing the egos and the personalities and getting these guys to work and play well together. And I think not enough is made of that. And I'm not necessarily giving any more credence to the, you know, the Phil Jackson being the, you know, the Zen master.
Right.
But when you look at, you know, because things fell, hey, he had Shaq and Kobe mm-hmm. together. He couldn't make that work. All right. So it happens. Happens to the best of them. It happens to the rest of them. But not enough attention, I think, is paid sometimes to what it takes to keep these teams together. Here are the personnel. Here's the talent. Let's make this work. Sorry, yeah. This one guy didn't like that this guy was getting minutes. We'll make him like it. Figure it out.
Couldn't agree with you more, Hardy. There's two things that make a great coach that I think are like the two most important things that should a coach has to do. His job is to come up with great schemes. Get game plans.
X's and O's.
Brad Stevens, I think he's got that. You got to motivate, too. These are pros, Ted. They, you know what? They're making a lot of money. They don't. No, that's not true. You have to know your players, and you have to know their like what buttons to press, what levers to pull, exactly know how to motivate them to get the best out of them.
Right. It's not necessarily putting two kids in a room and saying you two be friends.
No.
It's motivating.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, it sounds simple and cliche, but right, you're not going to get everybody to like each other. But can you motivate them to play well enough to get the win despite their personality differences?
I put more on Brad Stevens on this whole thing than I do Danny Ainge, and that's who we're focused on.
Look, these guys all want to be movie stars, right? Mm-hmm. Well, treat it like a director. You know, the player may not come to you and say, well, what's my motivation in this scene? But you have to anticipate. That's essentially what they're asking. Yep. You know, what's my motivation? Well, your motivation here, Jaylen, is to contribute in this way so that you can be the guy in a couple years.
Yeah.
Right? Prove this to me now, and you may not be the man. This may be Kyrie's team at the moment, but it won't always be. So your motivation is to show that you can play with players of differing attitudes and personalities so that you can be the man. What's your motivation? All right, your motivation is to outscore Kyrie even in fewer minutes.
Yeah.
Go do that.
Yeah. You got to talk to these guys. You got to tell if they're not happy with the minutes they're getting, go talk to them. You got to have FaceTime with them. You got to communicate with them. You got to let them know, particularly in this game, where they stand to get the best out of them. You just wonder if those conversations were had or if you just kind of ignored it. You just ignore it. Nothing's ever going to get, it's going to happen, and they're going to hear of all these stories coming out later. Things don't just fix themselves. You have to go fix them.
All right. A story on CBS Boston talks about the unraveling of the David Ortiz shooting plot. according to Dominican investigators. All right, how did this thing unravel? According to the DR, we'll tell you what they have to say coming up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Miss something?
You gotta wear your lucky jersey. Don't wash the lucky socks.
Rub your ball 16 times. Yep.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
All right, David Ortiz continues to recover at Mass General. More details coming out. And, of course, we had the press conference from the Dominican Republic a couple of days ago where officials said it was a case of mistaken identity through a translator who, silly me, I thought a translator's job was to be fluent in two languages. Apparently not the case, as we heard a couple of days ago. Now, the story on CBSLocal.com, how David Ortiz shooting plot unraveled, according to Dominican investigators. I recommend reading this if you're interested in the story. I think everybody is.
Yep. It's I think it's just one of those stories that it's just kind of jaw dropping. And the more details come out, the more your jaw drops.
Well, my jaw continues to drop in disbelief at what is becoming the official narrative on this. But, you know, when it's laid out like this, I don't know if it gives any more credibility to me. It again raises more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. Alberto Rodriguez Mota had one job, taking a photo of the man that his crew of hired killers was supposed to fatally shoot at an outdoor cafe. But the lighting was bad, and the target, an auto shop owner, was sitting behind a white beverage cooler. In the photo sent to the hitman, he looked like a dark, blurry figure in white pants. Hours later, the hitman approached, a hulking figure in a dark top and white pants, and fired a single shot into his back. Instead of killing his intended target, he had wounded David Ortiz, the baseball superstar universally adored in his native Dominican Republic. As the Red Sox slugger lay on the floor, the hitman's motorcycle driver skidded away. We know what happened with him. And now, as Ortiz recovers in the Boston hospital, officials say he was the victim, not of a bizarre plot, but he was the victim of a string of incompetent criminal mishaps that included, and again, this is where my jaw drops, misidentifying the most famous Dominican in the world, an instantly recognizable 6'3", 250-pound international celebrity. An independent consultant said, it's like they left this in the hands of boys. Without a doubt, it was amateurish. That would be one way of saying it. Another way of saying it is, this didn't happen. Not like you want us to believe. I'm still not buying it. I mean, do you believe for a second? And if you do, Ted, I would disagree with you, but you can read this column, you can read this report and say, yeah, I can see where this was happening. Do you think that David Ortiz was shot as a result of mistaken identity?
I can't buy it. There's too many things that suggest otherwise. There's too many bits of information that contradict that. There's so many holes in that narrative, if you will, and they just make it too hard to believe. I'm sorry. It does. And so this is it's a story that I don't know, like everybody's kind of saying, I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of it. David Ortiz is such a massive figure and is such a huge celebrity, not only here, but at the Dominican Republic, that there is a lot of, I think, people who are willing to either help create this narrative that I believe that is not true, which is the one that they're saying, that is a mistaken identity, which that's crazy, but there's a lot of reasons why you can see why they would be putting it out there.
If you can order a hit on $8,000, how much does it cost to cover it up and create this story?
Right.
That $70.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. According to the official account, Mota sat down by himself at the bar in Santo Domingo. He ordered a beer. When it got dark, he got up with his phone. He moved out of view of a video camera, and he took a blurry picture of Sixto David Fernandez, the guy that they was supposed to be the target. As Fernandez walked by, Rodriguez sat back down and sent the picture to, you sent it to the hitman, right? Mm-hmm. Sent it to the guy. No. Sent to a low-level drug dealer named Chucky, sitting in a prison more than 60 miles away. Then Chucky got the picture on a phone that was smuggled into the prison. He shared it with his outside contact, Gabriel Perez Vichian. I don't know. This is the guy named Bone, who then showed it to a group of kids, the alleged hitmen, just minutes before the shooting.
Come on.
So he takes the picture, sends it to a guy in prison. The guy in prison sends it to somebody else, who shows it to the other kids.
And this is the authorities in the Dominican Republic that are saying this.
This is the official account.
That's the official account.
The picture of Fernandez shows him in a black T-shirt sitting at a table with a white cooler blocking the view of his legs. Authorities say the suspects mistakenly assumed he was wearing white pants. By that time, Ortiz had arrived and taken a seat with his back to the street. He's wearing a black T-shirt, white pants, and thick gold jewelry. Shortly afterward, the suspected hitman approaches Ortiz from behind, shoots him, gets on the motorcycle, and takes off.
Do you find it telling at all, Hardy, that the lawyer for Ortiz was happy with the findings that they basically, his lawyer, who I'm assuming is speaking for David Ortiz, he's satisfied with the investigation and that their
well
findings,
done, case closed.
Yep, no, you know, like if you, I'm sitting there going, because it does it not behoove if any all these other allegations or these reports that maybe what really happened are true, that it's in the best interest of David Ortiz to get this to be put away quietly and move on. And so that his lawyer's saying, oh, that we're happy with all these findings. I mean, if it's what they're saying happened, if I'm David Ortiz, I'm like, dude, find this guy. This guy tried to kill you. I mean, this guy almost killed me. And, you know, we got to get this guy to justice, and we got to find the people that are, the reason for this. So there's so many things that aren't adding up. It's hard to believe any of that they're selling. It's a joke.
I honestly, if you're going to order a hit, to have it go about in this way, it's like, the less I know, the better. That would be one way of saying it. But then if you were to find out, no, I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to send a guy in prison. Yeah. He's going to send it to somebody else. And they're going to stand around the street corner. And they're going to, what? Yeah. No, this guy,
yeah.
That guy, that just go shoot him.
Yeah.
Don't shoot the guy in the back when you can't even see his face. What are you doing? They didn't do that. It's not what happened.
But
as you said, David Ortiz's attorney, very happy with the outcome. We have fake promos.
Oh, I love these.
You get to hang around for fake promos today, Ted Johnson. I don't know if you're going to be a part of any of them. We will find out in a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
They give.
Give it to me. Give it to me now, damn it.
Tell me I'm wrong. I don't know how you could.
And they give.
We need to break news every day.
And they give.
I love breaking news.
Can't get this kind of analysis just anywhere.
And now, it's time to take.
That's not a hot take.
End of the day.
Hot takes from the day.
Today's takeaways with Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
That's sweet.
Today's takeaways are brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss, whose new downtown location in Government Center is now open. Now you're only steps or a T-ride away to the long-term solution for weight loss. Hardy and Ted Johnson here for today's takeaways. Sometimes we will go outside the realm of the Zolak and Bertrand show for today's takeaways, and today is no different. As a matter of fact, we begin with what is being deemed a classic for today's first fake promo.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Yeah. It's not quite as big as it used to be. It's about 4 inches smaller in diameter, I think.
Wow.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't even know why it's fake. You're obviously referring to your neck.
Yeah, obviously.
Obviously. It's got to be, right?
That's what it was.
I don't understand what the double entendre is supposed to be. I don't understand. All right, so there we go. A Ted Johnson classic for the first fake promo. Ironically, Ted, we feel these promos, the fake ones, are a better indication of what the show is all about than the real promos you'll hear. For instance, this.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Also known as the gambler, translates to El Jugador. Or
I mean, Jugador.
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 El Jugador.
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 There you go.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boyokes.
I love the Google Translator. It's the best.
Have you seen the commercial for the thing that you can take with you to a, you know, I think they're in Tokyo and they're walking around. There's like, hello, how are you today? And then it immediately repeats it in Japanese.
So you can have a conversation with somebody in a different language.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fascinating.
Everyone's blown away by it.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
In Japan?
I don't know where it is.
I was going to say, is Kyrie using it in Japan?
Oh, perhaps. Maybe.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Caesar the Abuser, Cesar el Abusador.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I want to hear from Angel Martinez, Detective Internacional in Miami. He's been on the case, too. What does he have to say about all the developments? We haven't heard from Angel in a while. All right, moving on.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Paulie in the truck wanted to touch on it, though. Go ahead, Paulie.
Hey, how you guys doing today? You know, if they were smart down in the Dominican, they would have had Coach Belichick do the translation. We would have believed everything he said.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What do you think Bill's doing? Is he in Nantucket right now? Where's he at these days?
I don't know. Paulie started with a joke, and then he called back. I said, you know what? Don't do that to Paulie. Have him call back. What do you start talking about? Some band. So, I don't know.
Jackie Green.
And Bertrand cut him off even quicker. It wasn't a great week.
Poor Paulie.
Yeah, I know.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Brian is in Rhode Island.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been listening about Kyrie and kind of the psychological profile. And this other stuff for some other time. I was the misunderstood artist, the weirdo and the freak. And I think to develop the younger guys. And Kanye West is like a solo artist and brilliant, but
okay.
He wouldn't be able to play in a band.
What are you doing? All right, what are you doing?
All right, Brian.
That was after he had stopped talking and Bertrand asked him a follow-up. Bertrand asked him another question.
That was one of the all-time best call-ins ever. I'm thinking, dude, somebody's got to go to his house and walk him back off the ledge right now.
Isn't that... All right, moving on.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Yeah. So what do you do? What are you up to today?
Well, right now I'm drinking a beer behind the dumpster.
Okay.
What?
Which?
Did I just swear?
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ken and Lowell's turned into a Monday caller, and I love
drinking
it.
Drinking a beer behind the dumpster.
It's his weekend starts on Monday. All right, last one. Here we go.
Middays at 10, Zolak and Bertrand.
Who the hell wants to deal with that? Who wants to deal with this guy, period, thinking he's that as good as he thinks he is?
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ironically, happened the same day we were making fun of the translator in the Dominican. Yeah.
There was one bit that I thought would be in there. Jaylen Brown ordering a well-done steak.
Medium well.
Sorry.
Unfortunately, there's nothing fake about that. All right, Ted Johnson, great job. Thanks,
enjoy
buddy.
It, guys.
I appreciate it, Michael Bryan.
Thanks,
you. Felger Maz coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us,
Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.